What's up? It's Delaney, and I'd love to invite you to become an honorary co-host of the Self-Helpless podcast. Do you want to pick episode topics and guests? Done. Want to surprise your loved ones with shout-outs on the show for a birthday, project launch, a much-needed divorce? Whatever you're up to, would love to be a part of the celebration. Get your favorite and least favorite quotes featured on the podcast, submit questions for our special guests, and find lots more new features and surprises at patreon.com/selfhelpless. You'll also get added to our Patreon Insider email list to easily redeem rewards via a quick email reply. Because we know hanging out on Patreon isn't everyone's thing. You can also opt out of emails if you prefer to be a silent supporter of the show. And don't worry, we do not Scrooge McDuck these contributions. 100% of proceeds go directly to operating expenses that make this weekly podcast possible and available to all. Learn more at patreon.com/selfhelpless or simply click the link in this episode's description. Thank you for helping me fill the void of being the last standing host of the Self-Helpless podcast. Thank you so much.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to Self-Helpless, everybody. I'm Taylor Tomlinson.
I'm Delaney Fisher.
And I'm Kelsey Cook.
And today we have literally a dream guest on. So excited that he agreed to do it. I sent him a message because we've been friendly for a little bit and said, you know, if you ever have just 20 minutes, this would be amazing. It's okay if not, truly. I know how busy you are. And he immediately got back to me. And was like, for you, of course. And I was like, thank you. But also, if you really change your mind, it's fine. Just like, tell your assistant to tell us to fuck right off. Like, yeah. Was so just like, yeah. He's so just generous and famous and wonderful. So I just didn't want to take advantage of that relationship. And he was so lovely and stayed on for so much longer than any of us thought he would. Oh, he's so genuine and amazing. You know him from Queer Eye. He's an amazing fashion designer. He's everything you want him to be and more. It's Tan France, everybody.
Yay!
Yes! Oh!
I mean...
I have a big crush on him and I am very sweaty after that interview. I was sweating the whole time. Like, out-of-body experience.
We're all fangirling so hard. And were for the last hour and 15 minutes. So without further ado, please enjoy... the incredible Tan France. We usually start by asking everyone's like favorite quote. If you have a favorite quote, a least favorite quote, if you have one of each, if you have multiple.
Oh my gosh, I came unprepared. I don't have a favorite quote. I don't have a favorite quote. Do I have any least favorites? I'm sure if you gave me some, I could tell you how much I hate them. I have a quote. I think I just hate a fucking quote. You know those signs that they have in white people's houses? in their kitchens? Like, I hate those. My in-laws have a lot of those, and I hate them.
With rock love.
Yeah. Like, I'm sure you're thinking of much grander quotes, like, I don't know, a Hemingway. I don't know those. I grew up poor. We didn't have books.
I mean, we don't have Hemingway quotes. We usually have quotes that white girls posted on Instagram and attributed to no one.
Yes.
They just saw it on a pink square.
Universe. They usually do them with the universe, which I always really appreciate. Because it's not often... listen, I'm going to say this now so you know that I truly mean this. I'm married to a white man. I love white people as much as any other race. But I'm going to say the word white people, or the term white people a lot, because you guys do things that are different to the way we do things. And one of those things is speaking to the universe a lot, or think that the universe is speaking with you. And I talked about it with my friend a couple of days ago because I'd never noticed, but she said it and I was like, I've never heard a person of color say, I think the universe wants me to do this. I've literally never heard that before. As if that was the case, if the universe was thinking about us, it wouldn't have fucked us so hard. So we never thought that the universe was concerned about us.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
God, it really is. Mm-hmm. It's such a white girl thing to be like, I got a message from the universe and I need to follow it.
Yes. Yeah, and it's always to do with a boy. Like, I had this feeling that you were thinking of me or that you were really upset or going through a hard time, so I should text you. The universe didn't tell you that. Like, your own desperation told you that.
Yes. You know what's another one with the universe is my journey.
I love a journey.
Who doesn't love a journey?
Oh my God, good journey. Yeah. Wow. We have gone in real hard. I'm a really nice person. I should also represent this podcast thing. I really care about people. There's just a lot of silly stuff that happens that I can't help but notice.
Oh, yeah. You truly are one of the nicest people ever. Like the first Instagram live I ever did, you like called into it. I was like, I like haven't done one since because I'm like, we'll never beat that. They'll just expect tan on every time, and I can't recreate that.
So I met Kelsey and Delaney. You may not know this, but I met Taylor maybe 7 or 8 months ago. Backstage at Kimmel or Fallon. And I worried afterwards, I called my husband and I was like, you know Taylor Thomas? And he was like, yeah, duh. I think I just showed my crazy to her. And he knows what that means. I don't hide when I'm really excited to meet someone. And then I pretend as if they're my best friend immediately. So I just start hugging them a lot. And I'm sure you left, because comedians are usually like this. You're not the most social people. Usually you're actually kind of a little, comedians are a little standoffish. And so I walked away thinking, oh, she thinks I'm crazy. Yeah, no, she fully thinks I'm crazy.
No. I was not like, possible. Wow, Tan France not is possible. The nicest person I've ever met. And he did that for me. And I'll carry that in my heart forever.
I'm so excited. I was fangirling really hard. I'm so excited.
Oh my God.
I mean, Taylor, we're all fangirling so hard.
You should quit comedy, Taylor, because this is it. This is it.
I mean, it's canceled.
Yes. We have this on video.
That's why it got canceled, probably, because. Yeah. There's nowhere to go from there.
Nowhere to go. And Delaney's fiance is a big fan.
Oh my
yours.
God. Yeah, my fiance Cam loves you. He does the French tuck because of you when he dresses up and he tries to incorporate your tips into his fashion sense, which that he's still working really on. But
have
he
you
loves
seen an
you.
Improvement or is he listening wrong to what I'm saying?
I've seen an improvement with the way he'll wear certain things, but he hasn't gotten new pieces yet.
Okay. I'm fine with somebody not buying new stuff. I just think, just rework what you've got in your wardrobe or maybe wear it differently.
Yeah. You know, I don't like what he does. He wears like these giant shoes with like really skinny pants. So he just, you know what I mean? Like the giant skatery, what are they called? Yizzles? Yeezys?
Yeezys.
Yizzles, Delaney. We should have prepared before Tan. I'm so sorry, Tan. That is
explain Delaney
so
doing
embarrassing.
Before the call, which feels like an oversight on someone's part. Lady, I love that they are called Yeezys.
Yes.
Just tell him maybe avoid the super skinny pant.
Okay. I can
like
do
it's
that.
Just I know that it is when women do it, it's a thing, like I get it. When men do it, it's too skinny sometimes, especially on straight men.
Yeah, it's like, maybe this is like his leg and this is his shoe. You
do
know?
A straight leg instead of a skinny. It's a lot.
Okay, I'll tell him that. Thank you.
Now, how often do you have people ask you for fashion advice just in like your life? I mean, are you just that person now to everyone you come into contact with?
Literally about an hour ago, I got a text from a friend saying, okay, I'm doing this thing many times a day. Truly many times a day. My friends have always done it though, which I like very much. It's when it's people I've never met before, and it's confusing. And I'm this is going to sound harsh, and to anyone listening, it's not meant to be harsh. It's just I do so much of it for a living. And so when I get my DMs get blown up regularly with, I'm thinking of this for my wedding, or my husband, I don't like the way he dresses and it's our wedding soon, or it's a birthday soon. What do you think he should wear? And I think I can't give you a consultation. That's not physically possible. I mean, I could, but I just don't have that much spare time. Like even during COVID, I don't have that much spare time. And so, yeah, I do get hit up a lot for advice. If it's just one quick thing, I can answer that in a heartbeat. If they send a picture saying, do you like this? No. Like, really easy. But when it's a full-on consultation, like that, it takes a week during an episode of Queer Eye. I can't do that. Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah. But I do love that people like my advice enough to want to ask me. A lot of people don't, thankfully, a lot of people don't want to wear what I want to wear because I know that I'm over the top a lot. Because I'm on TV and I'm the fashion guy. Like, I can't just turn up on a red carpet in a tux, because anyone in my world would be like, the fuck, the fashion guy's just wearing a black tux? Every man's wearing a black tux. So you have to step it up so you look a little kookier than most. So I always say, I'm not saying dress like me, but I would happily have you take my advice. Because I know how to dress a person on a street. Like, I'm not completely deluded.
Right. Also, you're an expert. So it's like, it's like a doctor telling someone to, you know, eat less dairy. The doctor's probably very, very healthy, like very strict diet plan, but not everybody can achieve that level.
And I do love that you've compared me to a doctor, because the amount of training I go through is similar. I do feel smart as one. Yes, I will take that.
How did your love of fashion develop? Like, what's your background and journey with all your journey? With
Delaney is killing this. So you are killing this. You can have your own podcast.
She's going to, because we're going to kick her off. So, Yizzles with Delaney Fisher.
So I will tell you about my journey. I'm Muslim. And I'm Pakistani, and if, not to sound condescending, a lot of people don't know where it is, so I'm just going to tell you, it neighbors India. And so we have a certain culture that doesn't really embrace Western clothing, and so I didn't really wear that as a kid. I was usually in traditional clothing, and modesty usually is required in our culture if you're raised in a Muslim household. And so I was required to wear really unflattering clothing, but I would watch. I was obsessed with Melrose Place and 90210 when I was like five. Like, I knew what an abortion was when I was like 5 or 6, which is shocking. I loved American TV, and so I wanted to dress like Brenda and anyone else that was cool on any of those shows. And so I started getting my mom to buy me stuff that we would wear on like a Friday at school. On Friday, we'd have something called Dress Down Friday, because the rest of the time we wear uniform. And so I'd start to wear those at home, which was not great for my family, because apparently I looked like a whore every day. But really, it just meant you could see the shape of my body, which was confusing for our family, because usually you can't see the shape of somebody's body. Anyway, I started playing with clothing a lot. And then when I was like 7 or 8, and then finally when I got to the point of 13, so every summer up until 13, I would work in my granddad's factory. And he made denim. And so I learned how to make my own clothes. And so if my family wasn't going to buy it, I would just take the offcuts and make my own wardrobe. And I did that for years and years and years. And it encouraged me to dress the way I wanted to dress, to feel the way I wanted to feel. Because honestly, it's not as shallow as I think most people think. I think most people think, well, yeah, he puts people in clothes. Who gives a shit? However, it's because I know what it does the way I feel. Like, when I look in the mirror and I dress a certain way, I know that I've considered everything I've put in my body, and therefore I feel powerful. I really do. And I think that people are starting to see through the lights of Queer Eye, when we put somebody in something, they see the way they react to that, as opposed to how they were at the start of the episode. And they're like, oh yeah, that person who had zero confidence is walking out like they're the shit at this point, and it's because of what they're wearing. And that reminds me of the importance of clothing.
Love that. So cool.
Thank you
for sharing your journey with us.
Yeah, it's okay. I'm just doing what the universe tells me to do.
Beautiful.
I really do. I watch. I'm a real people watcher, and I watch when I'm out and about. A couple of years ago, before Queer Eye, I would sit there at a coffee shop in the window, especially in Europe. We always have like a bar table at a window, and I would love to, in between meeting with friends or whatever, I'd sit and watch people go by, and you could tell the people who gave no shits about what they were wearing. They carry themselves in a certain way. They seem to have no self-confidence. And every time I just thought, gosh, all it would have taken was for you to think, who do I want to be today?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love that so much.
Yeah.
How did Queer Eye come about for you specifically?
You know, I think that people assume that anybody in our industry has been working and working and working for so long to get to this point. And therefore, they've now like got that. This is their reward. They get a big show after slogging for years. That really wasn't the case for me. I worked as a designer. I was thankfully very successful in business, but I never had thought that I would be in TV. I never thought that I would be in entertainment in general. I truly am one of those unique stories you hear where somebody called and said, do you want to be on a TV show? No interest. I was always this person, but I wasn't comfortable being on camera. I was always like this, but I just had never thought of being in front of a camera. And so being in a Muslim household, there were no photos. Like, there's a photo from school which my mom purchased. You know those school photos that you have each year? You have them here,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. And they cost quite a lot of money. And again, we weren't very wealthy, but one time my mum purchased one of those small ones. She bought a photo so I could remember what life was when I was a kid. And that was literally the only photo I had until I hit my 20s. And even then, photos weren't very comfortable because we're not used to having photos. And so getting the job and saying, okay, you're the first one to shoot on set, and there's a crew of 36 people on set waiting to shoot you today, and you stand in front of those cameras thinking, I don't even have my photo taken, and you want me to perform in front of this whole crew of people? Truly terrifying. And so I didn't want to do the job. I didn't want to do the audition, so I turned it down a couple of times, and then somebody asked if they could FaceTime or Skype me, just to meet me. And I was like, yeah, sure. They'd seen me through my social media. I didn't have a social media following really, other than through my business. And I would just introduce what new products we had that month. I was a designer and I had women's clothing businesses. So I would talk through what new styles were dropping that month. But because of that, somebody from Netflix was a fan of the brand and loved my videos, because I was myself, I was a little bit sassy and I was very opinionated. And so she was like, there's this guy who just retired. I retired when I was 32. I saw my businesses and things were real, real good. And then she was like, well, he's got to be available. We're looking for somebody. We haven't been able to find this final person who could fit into this role on Queer Eye. And so they're like, he's available. Let's ask him. And so we did a FaceTime call. It went really, really well. And then they asked if I would come to LA. And I was like, oh, no, thank you. I'm definitely not going to get the job. Like, I'm brown, I'm Muslim. Like, this, you're never going to put somebody like me on TV. I'm not going to waste my time. Thank you. And I don't need this. I'm comfortable just chilling at home now. I'm going to travel the world and have my children and that's it. But they convinced me to come out. They were like, it's not going to hurt. Like, it's just a day. All we're asking for is a day out of your life. I went and I loved the Queer Eye boys. We all met and we got along so well. And then I said, yeah, this is a really long-winded story. I'm almost done.
Oh, no, it's great.
Amazing.
Then I got the job. And then we went to start shooting a month later. I turned up on set and I was so, so nervous. And most of the season for season one is shot out of order. It is all random. But the first episode is the actual first episode we shot. And if you watch that episode, I'm really quiet. I cried in between every scene because I was so nervous. I'd tell them I needed the restroom and I'd cry and then come back on set. and I felt physically sick. And so within the first 3 weeks, I tried to quit twice. I was like, this isn't the job for me. I'm not an entertainer. Please let me go. And then they were like, no, we'll sue you. I was like, all right, great. Please don't sue me. Okay. But I got real bitchy. I was like, if you try and sue me, I'll sue you. Like, you think that you're that powerful. I was like, I've got money too. I don't know who I thought I was. I was like, you think I have a better attorney? Anyway, they convinced me to stay. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I didn't, it wasn't just the pressure of the cameras. And I've told this story before. And so for anyone listening, I'm so sorry if you're hearing the same story over and over again, but it's the truth. It wasn't just because it's terrifying being in front of 30 random people who are waiting for you to dance. It was, I honestly was terrified thinking people are going to come for me so hard because there aren't people like me on TV, and you don't want to be the first one because people have their opinions and they're really nasty. And they do, if there isn't somebody like you, there's probably a reason. It's because they were also too scared to be on TV and to put themselves out there, because you then do represent, I apparently represent over 1 billion people. There are 1 billion people like me in the world, but we just weren't ever given a platform. And so when you are the only one, you are expected to be perfect. You're expected to not fuck up at any turn. And it's actually really difficult, really difficult. All of us are valuable.
Wow. Yeah. Oh my God. It's an unbelievable story.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So with your like very big rise to fame, of like fame that you didn't even really want, like how have you handled that? How have you handled, I mean, you guys are such big advocates of self-care and mental health and everything. So much goes into being a huge public figure. Can you
speak? You know, it sounds really arrogant, but it was shocking. Like within a week, within a couple of days, you couldn't really leave the house without people knowing on the street who you were. Like not just, oh, I think I know him from somewhere, like knowing your first name, your last name, they know what you do for a living, they know what you think about many things, because we don't have a script on career, we don't reshoot anything. Everything we say is our own personal opinions, they just edit it down. But everything we say is us. And so the people know you on the street who you've never met before. It's a very, very, very jarring experience, especially if it's something you didn't ever want. The other four boys, they've wanted, or the other four people on our show, sorry, they wanted not fame, but they wanted this world. They wanted to be in entertainment for many, many, many years. And so for them, it's something that they've really managed to reconcile in their heads what that might feel like. There's no preparing you, but you at least know that if you do get to the point that you want to get to, you do sacrifice a lot. For me, I wasn't prepared for it. And so it was difficult. Giving up your privacy completely. It's very rare that I leave the house when I'm in my home state right now of Utah. I also live part-time in LA. I don't really leave the house there unless it's a work event where I know that we're going to be safe. It's a weird feeling. And it's not that I feel actually unsafe, like somebody's going to physically attack me. It's just there's always a camera up. Whatever you do is being photographed. And the strange thing is that I've been forced to live this way. When I first, when the show first came out, within the first few months, I met up with a friend for brunch. We were in New York and this person was going through a breakup, and I held his hand across the table to console him. And within a day, it was on every stupid scandal piece of press. Tan's on this date with some rando. Tan's been married for 10 years. Who is this person? And it was shit like that that really made me think, okay, you've got to be really careful now. Your life isn't just your own. And that's what I meant about the pressure, like the amount of shitty DMs I got and the amount of shitty DMs this other person got saying, you're a homewrecker. I was like, no, he's one of my closest friends. My husband loves this person. What are you talking about? And so it just puts your guard up really badly. And so you just think, it's just not worth going out. So I don't go out. Instead, I have people to my house. Like I have people at my homes regularly because it's just not worth being out and somebody creating some random shitty story. And to go on, it's not just my husband, who is very secure. I love my husband so much. We have truly the best relationship. He knows I ain't interested in no one. Like, he's had my attention for 12 years. I ain't going nowhere. However, it's not just about him. Like, when those articles come out, his parents read it, his sisters, his brothers, like, people start to doubt, even though they know me, a picture says so much. I can argue it till I'm blue in the face. If I'm holding somebody's face, I'm just a very affectionate person. Taylor, you'll remember, like, as I said, I hugged you 1,000 times. I'm a very affectionate person. And when I care for somebody, I hold them. And then people assume, well, Tan's stopping that person. No, I can have friends without wanting to sleep with them.
Yeah. How did your husband react to you turning down the job, being offered the job? Was he very much like, I agree, like, you don't want to do that? Or was he like, do it?
Yeah, he's the one who convinced me. I wouldn't be in this without Rob. He said it for the right reasons. He did highlight the negatives, which is you may, if it's a big thing, you might give up your privacy. But I had moaned to him for years and years saying, where are our people? Like, where are our stories? Nobody give a shit about our people. And I wasn't just talking about the straight brown community, because there are a few representatives within our community. There's like Mindy Kaling and Jamila Jamil and Hassan Minaj. There's a few. Kamel Nanjiani. There's like literally like less than 10, but there are a few. Yeah. Whereas especially within the gay world is painted as white and black. There are options in media. And so he was saying, you've moaned for years and years saying that people don't see you, people don't care about your stories. You might have an opportunity to be the first one that finally gets to say, there's another version of what it is to be gay and Muslim and queer and an immigrant and all those things that I represent. And yeah, he convinced me, and I'm really glad he did.
Yeah. What are some of the biggest things you've learned in your relationship that make it so amazing? It's so cool to hear you guys have been together 12 years. We have a lot of listeners who are in relationships. Yeah. Do you have just advice?
If Queer Eye stopped tomorrow, I've said from day one to my agents, I want to do like a tour, like a relationship tour.
Where amazing.
Like legit, honest feedback. I am that person for everyone I know, even my castmates. And on Queer Eye, when there has to be a really awkward conversation to say, you're the problem, I'm brought in. Do any of you have British friends? Any of you?
I don't.
Okay.
Family.
Okay. The Brits are known for just saying things as they are. We don't have the same passive filter as Americans. And it's lovely that you guys do this, but you usually won't say to your friend, hey, like, I know that you're confused that this person broke up with you. Maybe you should have done this, this, and this differently. We will say these are the things that you could have done differently. And so that's what I want to do next. Like, I want to go on tour and say, tell me your woes. Okay, you did this wrong. try this next time. Because it worked really well for me, and every friend I have, I give advice to if they ask for it, and it helps solve that problem. I am very open with my husband. I will tell him what is wrong. The first year or so, a couple of years in particular, we struggled a lot because he's very American. He's from Wyoming. His family is Mormon, which means they are closed off on so many levels. They don't talk about anything. They don't talk about any feelings. Everything's brushed under the carpet. And so he really struggled hearing the real real, if I didn't like something that he was doing, I'm like, do not do that again. That's the easiest way to be single. And so he got very upset a lot. And now it works so well. If I do something that upsets him, he's like, please don't do that again. I don't like it because of X, Y, Z. And then I don't do it again. The thing that really makes us a strong couple is that we always know that whatever happens, we will fight to make sure this lasts. There's no such thing as divorce. There's no such thing as separation for us. We both came into this knowing we treat it like an Indian arranged marriage. It's something that is very common in my culture. No matter what problem arises, we will iron it out because we love and care for each other first and foremost. And so thankfully, we managed to navigate all those choppy waters. I will say this. For the first 6 years I wasn't living in America, I had a tourist visa, so I could come here for up to 30 days, then you have to leave for 6 months, then come back for 30 days. We did that for 6 years. And let me tell you, that's the best thing you could ever do. And let me explain why. And for the listeners out there, we're on a Zoom call right now, and all three of them have their mouths agape. And we literally did it in unison, all agape. And let me tell you why I think it's so important. I had dated beforehand. I had a couple of relatively successful relationships, but it just didn't work out for a couple of reasons that were fundamental for me. But then I came to America to start dating because I was in my 20s. I wanted to sleep my way across the country. Like, that really is the way it is. I did really well with American boys. They couldn't understand what I was because of my coloring. So it just really excited them. And then I met my husband, who I love very much. But when you can't see when you can't be with somebody physically, you take sex out of the equation, all you have is emotion, all you have is conversation. And so you almost have dated somebody at some point where the first 6 months that sex is that good, where you're like, oh, he's the best. And then 6 months down the line, you're like, what the fuck was I thinking? This guy's a cunt. Like, the cunt. But you didn't see it. You didn't see it because he was dicking you all kinds of right. And so what I learned from this was, when he's not around, I can't be intimate with him. And so all I have is conversation. I get to know him on such a personal level, nothing shocking. So within a few months, nothing was ever shocking to me that he did in his behavior, because every day for a couple of hours, we would do this. And there was no physical intimacy to jade your impression of a person.
Yeah, that's so, wow. That makes total sense to me on that end of it. I have heard so many other times though, where it's like the exact opposite, that because you're not having that in-person interaction, you're missing out on what their actual energy is, or maybe some just certain things that you only get in person. Did you experience that at all?
No, I disagree.
Okay.
I think that you can get everything you need through conversation. I mean, not permanently. As long as you know that there's light at the end of the tunnel. We always knew that I was going to live in America. We just couldn't get my permanent visa. So as long as you know that you plan to be in the same place, I think that you can iron out all those kinks. I really do think sex can confuse, or intimacy can confuse a relationship so greatly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. But yeah, you're right. There needs to be an end date in mind.
Yes.
Otherwise, it'll drive you crazy.
Absolutely. If we thought that we would live separately for the rest of our lives, it wouldn't have been for me. But we knew that we were working towards a common goal of actually being together. And in the meantime, we were going to get to know each other as much as possible so that when we can be together, there are no surprises.
Mm. So it was for 6 years, 30 days.
3 months on, 6 months off. 3 months on, 6 months off.
3 months on.
And we were married for 4.5 years of that time. We got married a year and a half after we met.
Wait, so when you got married, you didn't have like a marriage visa or anything?
No, in America, you know, I love my country so much, but we were a little delayed with the gay marriage rights. And so it wasn't legal here. So we got married in London, and then we had to wait a few years until America finally caught up on decency, and then they recognized us as humans, and then we were allowed to be together again.
Wow.
You like forget it was that recent. I feel so dumb.
I'm like, it happened 5.5 years or 6 years ago. Yeah, it's not been long at all.
So Unreal. And during those 6 month periods, there was no visit, there was nothing. It was just straight up
Skype every day for at least a couple of hours. But no physical, not in person. Wow. I was living in England, he was living in America, and we weren't earning a lot at that time, so we couldn't afford to fly out regularly because that shit's expensive. Like, it's $1,500 each ticket, and so you could do that maybe once every 6 months, but it's a lot.
How was your guys' trust with one another? Because
to establish that at first. You really do. And thankfully, I knew he wasn't doing anything with anybody else. He had no interest in anybody else. And he knew the same for me. That is the most complicated point, I understand, for a long-distance relationship. But as long as trust is there, and I think you should trust somebody at the start of a relationship. If you don't date them. As long as they've given you no reason to break that trust, you should be good to go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Between that and surviving a pandemic, you guys can get through anything.
No, truly we feel that way. We've been in the same house together now for 5 months every day. Not one disagreement, not one argument, not one raised voice at any point. This bitch makes me laugh so hard, like, all day every day. And that is what we did. We planned very early on. The one of our first conversations on our first date, he was like, "What are you looking for in a relationship?" I was like, "I'm not looking for a relationship," because I really wasn't. He said, "But okay, if you were to, what is the most important thing?" And I know that this is going to sound bullshit. Of course, like, you want to be attracted to the person that you are dating. We understand that, so that's by the wayside. I just needed somebody to make me laugh. I'm really playful. It's so rare I'm serious, even though weirdly, you guys have made me be very serious on this call, which is so not like me. But I am usually very, very playful, and I just want somebody to play. Like, I just want a comedy partner at home. And thankfully, he's there.
Oh, I love that. Tan, I am dying to know what your self-care regimen is. How do you relax and take care of yourself and de-stress and everything?
TV. Do you know there's this comedy special that's really good? It's Taylor Thomas. I've watched it, I think, 4 times. Very good. We watch comedy specials every day, pretty much. So that I use to unwind. I know I'm going to sound like I'm stalking you, or kissing your ass, but I really am obsessed with comedy. And so that keeps me really entertained. I just need to laugh a lot. And then when I'm not watching TV, I'm going on hikes in the mountains. I'm a very simple person. And it's funny, I think that people assume that if in my spare time, I'm usually at a mall. I'm not a big shopper. I don't care about fancy shit usually. I'm a very outdoorsy person. I'm usually in something called Tevas. I think you're on this, so you probably don't know what they are, but Tevas are like a hiking sandal, which are so unflattering. But I hike. Like, that's what I do with my life. I hike and watch TV. I don't live a fab life at all. And so the things that make me happy, the things that I focus on for my self-care, and that is at home, time with my husband on the couch, and then, and obviously baked stuff. Anyone who knows me knows I bake almost every day, and I'm obsessed. So do you guys know what the show is, The Great British Baking Show?
Oh, yes.
Of course.
Fall asleep
to it. Great. It's my favorite show, and I've been baking since I was a kid. And when I am not working, that is what I will do. It's very relaxing, and I just like to consume a lot of sugar. I can live my whole life never eating a savory meal ever again. Like, it doesn't bother me. I just know that I'm probably diabetic, so I should calm down with my sweet stuff. But I bake these days, and I'm actually a very good baker. I don't have many talents in this world, but I do bake well. And I did Celebrity Great British Baking Show, which doesn't show in America, it's in the UK only, and I won.
No,
and it was my dream.
You won! Oh my
it was
god,
my dream. I loved it so much. I did it last year. I entered the tent, and we've done a lot of incredible shit the last couple of years. I've met the most amazing people, the people that I had admired since I was a little kid, but nothing affected me the way the tent did. I walked in and I literally cried. I was so happy to be there. It's my favorite show. It was beautiful.
I love that.
I also just want to say, you saying I have few talents in this world is
crazy.
That's bullshit. But
no, it's really not. I have literally like two. I can whip up a dress like no one else, and I can bake a cake that usually turns out pretty damn great. Other than that, I actually don't have any discernible skills. I can make people smile. That's it. Like that. It's not really a talent. I've literally created a career out of just smiling big and hopefully entertaining someone.
That's so funny. How often do you live in LA out of the year?
Last year I was there about 4 months. So this is going to be a real bougie conversation. So the last couple of years I've been in LA a lot because of work, like there's like the awards season and then other press and shit that we do. Last year I only had 19 days in my own home. Like, that's how crazy busy our schedules are. I was doing 3 shows last year that consumed the majority of my year, and when I wasn't doing the 3 shows I was on a press tour, and they're international press tours for all 3, so you're constantly away. And so I had 19 days in my own home, but the majority of my year seemed to be in LA, because that's always a stopover for something. And so I was sick of being in hotels more than an actual house. And so I got a house at the start of this year in January. We've been renovating for the last few months, and it's ready, and I move out this week, just temporarily. So I'm going to flip-flop between LA and Salt Lake. But I always hated LA. You guys, are you all from LA?
I was going to ask. We're
all in LA. But you're not from LA, right?
I'm from Washington State. Okay. And Taylor's more Northern California.
Do you all live in LA now?
Yes.
Mm. Okay. I hated LA up until literally last year. I'd never lived there before. I was up until 2 or 3 years ago, before Queer Eye, I wasn't really there. Maybe twice I had visited, and I thought, oh, it's just fine. Everybody looks a certain kind of way, which bugs me because I feel the pressure to look attractive, and I don't look like them. Like, I'm not a muscle god. I'm not 6 feet tall. Like, it really made me feel horrible about myself. And so I didn't have any interest. And then I shot a show there last year, and so I had to live there for 6 weeks without leaving. We shot almost every day. And I found a little bubble, and it's a douchey one because it's Beverly Hills, but it was just so nice. And I didn't have to ever get on the freeway. I just, within 15 minutes, everything was there, like the studio, my grocery store, my gym, and I was done. And I had a little group of friends, and I fell in love with it. And so I was like, you know, I can make my peace with this. The weather's always quite nice. And so I've been going a lot more recently, and I love it. If I don't go anywhere else in LA, I'm very happy.
Yeah, good spot.
I mean, yeah, no, so few people actually like LA, I feel like. A lot of us just live here because we have to.
Yeah.
But people find their bubble. I mean, a lot of people live in like a little cool area where they can walk to what they need, or they have their people nearby. And like, even hearing you say like, oh, I felt so out of place in LA. I mean, I look at you and I go, oh, you fit right into LA. What are you talking about?
I felt that way.
So I think everyone does. Yeah.
Oh, they can't. Like, you see those tools walking down the street knowing that they're it. Like, and I hate that shit so much. Have you ever been to a gym called Equinox?
Oh, no,
I have not, but we know.
I have looked at one.
Yes. I think so, I
unfortunately, Equinox is in all the cities I usually travel to for press. And so I signed up for it. And I've always felt, over the last 15 years or so, I felt like, okay, you found your comfort in yourself. You can make peace with the fact that you look this way as opposed to like an Instagram model. That's fine. But Equinox is one of those places that even now, I went in probably 8 or 9 months ago. It was the last time I went in. As far as most people would be concerned, I had made it. I had done well a few years prior in financially. And now I was on one of the biggest shows on TV globally. Good enough. I still walked in and felt like a drowned rat. I walked in with all these boys walking around who were ripping their tiny little tank tops. And they all look at you like you're scum. And I'm like, you're right. I am fucking scum. Apparently, I'm not someone until I look like one of you fucking douchebags. Such a horrible feeling. It's such a horrible feeling. And I walked in with coffee because I can't live without coffee. And they walk up there like, whatever it is, their protein shakes and shit. I'm like, fuck you, douchebag. Leave me alone. I felt fine until I came in here and now I feel like shit. So there is so much pressure in LA. I do hate that feeling. I wish we could just tell them all to just calm the fuck down. Like, you don't need to go to the gym every day. Like, live your life, you weirdo. Like, and there were many things that bothered me about LA, but the main thing was, so in England and in Salt Lake, when you finished your meal, they will just give you a dessert menu. And in LA, I'm like, fuck yourself. Like, don't make me ask for a dessert menu. Like, what a shitty thing to do. Like, of course I want dessert. Like, how the hell am I meant to finish my meal without fucking dessert? And you know exactly what face they're going to pull when you ask for that fucking dessert menu. Does anybody else want one? Looking at all the people who obviously live in LA and knowing that they're all going to say no. So you're sat there like, and I do it in a really dicky way. Now I'm like, yes, I don't care that you don't want dessert. I want dessert.
That's the most inspiring thing I've ever heard in my life.
Fucking skinny bitches. Like, just give me my fucking dessert menu.
You're so right. Because then you have to have that conversation. It's not just that you have to answer the waitress or the waiter. It's that you have to do,
That's really sweet that that women are usually more apologetic about it. Thankfully, again, when you get to know me better, Taylor in particular, you will really get to see this. I usually don't excuse my behavior. So with all of my friends, they know. And I won't even have to say, I'm sorry. I'll just turn and say, fuck off, I'm having dessert. Like, if you want. I do not care if you think I'm a pig. I'm having dessert.
I love that so much.
Can't wait to live. Gotta live your life.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
There are many things I like about LA, but that is the food situation is my biggest gripe. I've never found so many people have problems with, and I really do see it as a problem, like a real problem with food.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. It's true. And there's so many good places to eat in LA. There really are.
Beautiful. Great.
The city is full of people going, and this is what other people do. This is what I will do if I want dessert. I don't go, yeah, I want dessert. I go, yeah, let's look at it.
I know. But I'm sure you know. I'm sure you're desperate, like, give me the fucking dessert. But outwardly, you're like, oh, well, do you want to share something? I did this literally 2 days ago. It was the first time I went to a restaurant in, I think, 4 or 5 months. And I went with my husband and a couple of friends, and they said, do you want to share something? I'm like, have you fucking met me? No one's touching my dessert. Like, no one is touching my... If you want something, you get it. I'm not sharing. I didn't wait 4.5 months to come to a restaurant to share something.
Yeah, that's
like,
how
my
I
food,
am.
Man. My food's really important to me.
Yeah.
What was that like going... Because I actually did that this week, too. I went to a restaurant that was, like, outdoors and distance and everything.
Yeah.
And I was very stressed out for the first, like, 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And then you settle into it, and you're like, okay, I'm all right. Which is so funny because I went to protests and I wasn't nervous about it. But at a restaurant, I was really nervous. How did you guys feel?
In Utah, it's not as rough as LA right now.
Right.
So it wasn't as intense. And we went to a smaller town further outside of Salt Lake. So it felt a little safer. However, yeah, within the first 15, 20 minutes, I kept saying, does this feel weird? Yeah. I'm sure everyone at the table is like, fuck off. Yes, it does, but don't say it. Because everybody, no, but obviously you're not going to wear a mask whilst you're eating, but it just felt strange to see no one in a mask. I don't know. I really can't rationalize it. It just makes no sense. I'm just a little scared. And it's not like I've had a concern. I've not at any point thought, oh, do I have it? You see the reports on TV and you just think, oh gosh, am I going to be one of those people that they say, we don't understand what happened. He seemed really fit. And then all of a sudden he dropped dead. Like I've got that horrible feeling that I'm that person. And so, and I'm sure we all feel that way. We're all like, oh no, I don't think I'm going to be one of the ones that just has a slight, and then they're fine. Like I have started to panic about it. So I've been really, really careful. I've social distanced to the fucking nth degree. Mm-hmm. I bet I go to the grocery store maybe once a week. And even then I'm like a maniac looking around constantly. Is anyone near me? And that's the only place I've been. And so being out for the first time in months was super weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. How was the start of quarantine and all this for you guys?
It was super weird. So we were filming Queer Eye season 6. We had just started literally 5 days prior. We had all moved to Texas to start shooting the show on the Sunday. And then by the Thursday, we were all like, okay, I guess we go home for a couple of weeks until we ride this thing out. And so we flew home. And nothing really was going on in Texas. And I flew home, and within a day, apparently no more toilet paper was available in the state of Utah. And so that was really confusing. There wasn't any milk or bread. So it didn't feel scary until we went to the store. And I'm sure you all saw the movie Contagion. I've watched it a few times over the last few years. And I was thinking, oh no, I know what comes next. They start to go to homes. Like they start to loot people's homes. So the only thing that worried us wasn't actually the fear of getting COVID. It was that somebody's going to come to our house and try and take whatever we have. And that was terrifying. Thankfully that didn't happen. And so over the next few weeks, we just stayed in as much as possible. And it's not worried me up until this point really that I'm going to get it until I was out.
Mm.
That's the only time it's screwed us over. Up until this point, we're some of the incredibly lucky ones, and I understand that. We're not worried that we can't go to work. It's just for the first time I've been able to be home. I've owned this home for 2 years. I've never been here longer than 3 days up until COVID. And so for me, it was just lovely to be home and to be with my husband for longer than a couple of days a week.
Yeah.
Which I know sounds horrible, because I know that the world is struggling so much, but for some people being at home is the ultimate luxury. Like they haven't done it in a long time. For somebody who truly lives on the road, I hadn't done it in so long. So I was grateful to be home at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a bit of a gear shift, but you know, you and each of your castmates are experts in these various areas on the show. What's something that you've learned from your castmates that has been maybe something you incorporate into your daily life or just a big game changer for you?
You know, it's not that they all teach little things that I absolutely take away. However, it's not so much that. For me, it's like an overall attitude shift. Up until the point when I started on Queer Eye, there was still certain homophobias. Not homophobias. Things that I was concerned that if I showed them, people might not like me as much. For example, if I had an effeminate side, I wouldn't show it as much. I would hide it away just in case somebody thought, oh, he's too faggy for me. Like I don't like him because of that. Or I don't like that he crosses his legs. Or I don't like that he moves his hands so much. And being with four other queer people who, we all encourage each other to just be ourselves. Like, forget that the world expects a man to be masculine. That can fall by the wayside. Just do who you are, and that's all that you can do. That's the thing that I've really taken away. And with every season that we've shot, I've gotten more and more comfortable with just highlighting every part of my personality. Some of it's incredibly feminine, some of it's not, and I'm fine with that. If you had told me that I would be comfortable crossing my legs for the world to see 3 years ago, I would have told you that it would never happen. I know that if I cross my legs, I'd have to quickly slap them back to the other position so people don't think that I'm a concern. And that really is how life used to be. Whereas now, I'll throw on a heel and I don't give a shit if somebody's got something to say about it.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's nice. Yeah, so that's my biggest takeaway, is just to be authentic and not be massively concerned with what people think. And I know, again, you know, every time I say something, I'm like, don't forget what the haters will say. And so for all you haters out there, I get it. I'm in a position of privilege. Like, I know that I get to be a certain way. When you've hit a certain level of notoriety, you are afforded privileges that you wouldn't be afforded if you were just average Joe Schmo on the street. I'm sure Joe Schmo couldn't wear a pair of heels and get away with it. I know I can, because I'm on a red carpet and I'm wearing those pair of heels and people celebrate my bravery. I understand that there's a big difference, but I do like to be in a position where I get to be myself.
Yeah, and to encourage other people to be themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
We know you only have an hour. Delaney, do you have any last questions?
I was just going to say, any final words of wisdom that you would like to give to our wonderful listeners, and obviously whatever you...
Gosh, words of wisdom. I have no words of wisdom. I'm not very wise. But I will say that the way... it's something that I've talked about a lot over the last couple of years. The way that we are with ourselves is often really shitty. And the one thing I've noticed with every one of the people that we've helped on the show over the last few years is that we don't do ourselves many favors in making ourselves feel better and allowing ourselves to be happy, because we think it's selfish or that we just think we're not worthy of it. I think take those moments where you can celebrate who you are and highlight the best of who you are. And if it means having a long bath and forgetting about all the drama in the world right now, the stress of the world right now, that doesn't make you a bad person for being selfish for an hour. That means that you need time to decompress before you can go out and fight that fight again. Or when you get dressed up in the morning and you look in the mirror, if you want something that's a little more put together and you know that, I don't know, the neighbors don't have that fancy thing that you have that you're wearing right now, don't feel shame about it. If it makes you feel good about yourself and therefore you're in a mental place to be able to help others, then so be it. We've got to stop beating ourselves up and judging ourselves so harshly and just be a little kinder to ourselves. There's something that I do that I've been doing for many, many years. When I brush my teeth in the morning at the start of every day, I don't put clothes on before I brush my teeth. The first thing I do, I step out of bed, my bathroom's just there, and I will brush my teeth in my underwear. And it usually takes a couple of minutes to brush your teeth. If it doesn't, you're definitely not doing that right, and you're going to have major problems. So when you're brushing your teeth, I just look at myself in the mirror, and I know that I have many flaws that people might see, but I don't care about those within those 2 minutes. In my head, I'm thanking myself and whatever that is out there for all the things that I do like, and I see the things that I'm grateful for, especially in the positions that we're all in. We're all doing something very public. People are always ready to tear us down. They're always ready to say, this looks stupid on you, you look old, you look ugly, you look fat, you look skinny, you look this, you look that. I can take that for the rest of the day if I know that at the start of the day, I at least know that I like these few things about myself, no matter what anybody else says. I like these things about myself. So I start on my physical things, and then I will focus on my the other things that I have about my personality that I like. And no matter what somebody says to me for the rest of the day, and I get it all day, every day, I'm sure you guys do in your DMs too, it's a shitty feeling, but I feel so much stronger thinking, you may think that, but I know this, this, and this about myself for sure.
That's so good advice.
But you're like, I'm not wise. Here's the wisest thing you'll hear today.
Seriously, good takeaway. Oh, wow.
Yeah, thanks. Oh. No, I don't want to go yet. Give me 5 more. I've got questions for you.
Oh, my gosh, you can't. We're trying to be respectful of your time.
Yes. Oh, no, I'm fine. I've got more time. I don't have a call till 3:30 my time, which is 2:30. I've got time. Okay, so has anyone ever interviewed you three on this together?
Not really, directly, no.
Great! Okay, this is what I do for a living. And so, I want to know, how did this happen? Where did we meet? How long has it been going on? And how do we feel about it?
Great. Love it.
How do we start this? Love it.
How did you meet? Were you all friends before this?
Before the podcast?
Yes.
Mm. So the three of us were, so Delaney is a retired stand-up comedian now, but we've been doing the podcast for a little over 3 years and we all met through stand-up. So Taylor and I are stand-ups full-time.
Okay.
Well, we were before COVID. Now we do virtual shows from our living room.
Now you both sit down a lot. Uh-huh.
Yes. Not a lot of standing. So we met through that. We had started to decide, oh, maybe we should write a pilot together. We should try and write some sort of project.
Wait, did you meet a stand-up event?
Through somewhere? Comedy, yeah, through stand-up shows.
Okay. I think I met both of them at comedy festivals where I was heavily intoxicated.
Always a good way to get on stage.
Like blossomed from there.
Yes.
So when you said you retired, people were just sick of you turning up on stage. Inebriated. Okay, great.
I left entertainment and I started a business. So now I'm a creative consultant.
Ah.
So now I'm like a stay-at-home comedian, at least on the podcast.
Okay. And then who came up with the idea to do a podcast?
Taylor, wasn't it you who was like, we should do a podcast while we're doing this?
Yeah, I think I was like, these two like hot girls aren't going to stay friends with me unless we have a weekly project. And we'd like written this pilot together and we were like, but that takes forever and we don't know if that'll get made. And I was like, we should do a podcast. We all like self-improvement. We all like self-help and, you know, kind of feeling it out. And within like 20 minutes, they had emailed me back with like ideas and a name and a
Google
date.
Doc.
Yeah. And Google Doc. Kelsey's like, I have all the equipment. I know how to edit. Like, it was like linking up with two other people who had also been the leaders in every group project in sixth grade.
I know.
Everybody was very similarly minded.
What happened to the pilot, just out of interest? Did you ever pitch
it?
We didn't. Another network had picked up a project that was identical to ours, but with three men instead of three women.
And that will always trump three women.
Mm-hmm. Something
same
happened.
Name, same name, same concept, same everything. We don't really know what happened, unfortunately.
I forgot about that. I blocked that out.
Yeah, it was very traumatizing.
It was very bizarre and terrible, But the podcast has been the thing now that ended up being successful for us, and we started it just as like, this will be fun and we want to keep being around each other and make something together, and now we're so lucky that it's been over 3 years and we have this great community.
Lovely. So I'm not I don't do many podcasts. You must know this, people get podcast requests constantly. No joke, like truly no joke, at least 10 a day, minimum 10 a day. Like my manager, my agents contact me at the end of each day saying, okay, this is what has come in for you. And it's hard because it's hard to set yourself apart in the podcast world right now. And it's nice to have a podcast where you equally clearly respect each other. So you allow each other time to ask a question. Whereas often you find with a group of people on a podcast, there's somebody who wants to be the star or is the star, and the others aren't allowed to really have the time. And so it's nice that you all respect each other to be able to have a conversation that flows nicely, as opposed to some of the ones I've done where I'm like, there are other people on this call.
Yeah. Yeah, we try to be really careful about it. And we've been really pleasantly surprised that over Zoom, we're still able to do it, because when we're in a studio, it's a lot easier.
Yeah.
To kind of feel who has the next question. But we've had calls where we're like, oh, sorry, go ahead. Like, because.
Yeah. I mean, obviously with us as a fivesome, it is very difficult. We are all very, very, very chatty people and very inquisitive. And so we always have 1,000 questions. It is hard, but after a while, you really get into the flow. You know when somebody's going to speak, or you know that somebody has something relevant in that space to mention. And so it does get easier and easier. Now, Delaney and Kelsey, when she was filming, we're going to talk about you as if you're not here. When she was getting ready for her special, did she show you any of the material beforehand? And did you, are you in a position where you can say, don't add that, that shit?
Did see the material ahead of time. And I saw her, I saw you run it at a different show, Tay.
I feel like I sent you the hour, Delaney.
Yeah, you sent it to me. And, you know, Taylor
is nice.
Taylor needs no help with shit. Let's be real. Yeah. She'll ask like, hey, do you like this in this position? Or, you know, ask those types of things. And I mean, it's still fun for me, even though I didn't like doing stand up myself, you know, career wise.
Why? Say more.
The lifestyle, honestly, I was so depressed. I was so depressed being out every night and gone on the weekends. And it was just very much, I'm very much an introvert and I'm a homebody and I was going against that. But I love the craft of it. I love the writing. Yeah. I love the collaborating with other people. And so when Taylor or Kelsey send me stuff like, hey, what do you think? I still get that excitement, even though, you know, I'm not.
I totally get that. Being on the road is really fucking hard. Really, really, really taxing on your mental health. I when I mentioned that comedians are often a little distant, I think they see some shit on the road. Like it's super into, I'm always super lonely and I can talk to a brick wall for at least 2 hours before I've realized it hasn't said anything. but even I struggle on the road after a while. It is an incredibly lonely place. It takes a real stamina to get through it. And so I can see now why when I meet very successful comedians, you know that they've been through this a long, 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 long time and they don't want to do the small talk anymore. It's too hard.
Yeah, you have to, like, Taylor and Kelsey love it so much and they're so amazing at it. It's like, you have to love it so much to do all the other stuff that is required of you.
Yeah.
And I didn't love it as much, unfortunately. But I love what I do now, so it worked out.
Good, good. And so you saw her show and did you go for the live? Where did you do your live, like the actual taping?
Portland, Oregon.
Were either of you there?
Delaney was Kelsey had shows.
I had comedy shows on the weekend.
Did you know when you were? I promise that the plan wasn't to make this all about your comedy special. I'll ask you in real life as well, I'm sure. But did you know when you were in the audience? Oh no, this is going to be good. This is going to be a thing. Can you sense it when you're at a show? Like you can tell that something's going to hit.
Oh, Taylor or me?
Taylor, Delaney, no, you about
asking
Taylor.
You, Delaney.
Oh, I mean, I had seen, I mean, they're both hilarious. So anytime, I mean, I know a lot of their material now. So you know where the laughs are going to come or, you know, like when they've added something new, which is really exciting and stuff like that. But
can you tell when they're nervous on stage?
No, I feel they're freaking professionals. They're pros. They are cool as a cucumber up there. And honestly, no. They're the only two comedians I watch. They're the only comedy shows I still go to because it's like I'm here for my friends.
There are a couple of other incredible women, and I know you know them.
Oh,
and
of course.
You know all of these people.
Of course.
I recently saw a lady called Rachel Feinstein.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Who really made me laugh hard. It was so vulgar, which I really appreciate in a comic. And then Wanda Sykes, if you haven't seen her special called Amma Be Me, have you seen this one? Oh, it's so good. Kelsey, I told you I've got questions for fucking days. I could go on for literally an hour. Kelsey, do you ever perform in LA?
I do all the time.
Okay. Taylor, you, as you know, because we've been texting about it, I'm coming to LA soon. Whilst I'm there at any point over the next few years, if Kelsey's performing, will you please take me to her show? I would like to see. Give yourself a fucking shout out. Where can we see your material?
Oh, you're so sweet. Well, so I've done a few TV appearances. I did The Tonight Show and A Little Late with Lily Singh on NBC and a Comedy Central thing, and that's all on YouTube. And then I just shot my first comedy special, and that airs on Epix in either October or February. It depends on which chunk they're putting it in with programming. But
were you happy with the performance?
I was. It was such an it was shot like 2-3 weeks ago during the pandemic. So it was shot out in an outdoor venue, socially distanced, such a strange way. When you picture, when you're, you know, coming up in comedy, yeah, thinking of your first comedy special, would have never pictured it during a pandemic, people like with their masks on. And, but it was so, it felt so good because we have been without performing live for months and months. It's never gone this long in my life not performing. So it felt almost like a time capsule performance that I got. It's cool. I got to do this during this time and do jokes specifically about what's happening, and that it will exist in this, like people will watch and go, oh, this was during the pandemic. Look at everybody sitting spread out.
When you, I've got two, a couple more, and then I promise I'll let you go back to your lives. When you are workshopping it, and when you're not filming it, do you find it easy? Does the camera add a pressure to you? It does to me when I'm on camera. It's nerve-wracking. Does it
absolutely
make it?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think the more you do it, the quicker that can kind of fade out of your mind and kind of just get into the set. But always right when I get on stage, I'm very aware of like, oh, wow, okay, there's a camera and it is close to my face. Yeah. And so it's more than just, am I telling the jokes right? It's like, is my face contorted weird? Is my hair stuck in a fake eyelash? It's like, it's just so many, we've talked about it as women doing TV performances for comedy, that there's just other things you have to think about, unfortunately.
I mean, you are right. Women have more pressure. However, as a gay man also, to a certain extent, there is pressure. And what I will say is that I have, do you have a, you all have, must have a side, right? Everybody has a side when they've done something public. Great.
I still have to figure that out.
Okay. We all take our time to fight. It's got to be in your time. I found mine. And every time there's a camera, when they start to come on the set, no. And I do love now when I've gotten to a point where I can be like, no, it feels so nice. Like if the cameraman starts coming over, no.
Global sensation, please. Yeah.
It's not that. It's
to the left.
It should be.
No, it's just I've hit a certain age and I'm like, I shouldn't have to put up with that angle. I'm 37. I don't want to be seen there anymore. There's age on that side. There isn't age on this side. Move the fuck over here and get the younger side. Really? Okay. And the last one, and we're done. Kelsey and Taylor, I need you to answer this in the most honest way, but not about each other. Are you happy with Kelsey?
No.
I'll start with you.
What? Oh, there's more.
Are you happy? No. Are you happy with what you wore, Kelsey? And how did you choose what to wear? Because whenever I'm doing like a big thing, and obviously for a comedian, their special is the thing. Like that's your Oscars night, I guess.
Sure.
How do you decide what you're going to wear? Because that's evergreen at that point. Like that you're going to look back on that in 15 years and think either yay or nay. How did you decide, and were you happy?
What a great question. Well, it was outside. So there were these other factors in it of like, it's going to be a little chilly. I went on stage after 11 PM.
Wait, where were you? LA?
Yeah. Shooting. It was shot in Burbank and in like the hills of Burbank. And they were like, it gets pretty cold at night. So
yeah, it is. Okay. Fair.
So that right there kind of cut out some options where it's like, well, I'm not going to be out there in a tank top or a dress. It's going to be different. So I wore, black boots, black skinny pants that were tucked into the boots. Was it a black bodysuit with it? Like a black t-shirt bodysuit with a light pink jacket over it. And I wanted to feel confident, but comfortable. Taylor and I have both done TV appearances where we've gone the more feminine route in how we've dressed. And we feel beautiful, but there's a big part of comedy where you need to feel really comfortable and like that you can move. It's not a just stand and pose. It's
you're not a dolly bird.
You gotta be physical sometimes. And so I felt comfortable, physically comfortable in what I was wearing, but I also looked in the mirror and was like, I'd kept my hair down for it. I had, you know, full makeup on. Yeah. I felt confident, but I could still move.
Good. Taylor Thomas.
Could have used your help though. Would have loved some tan expertise.
Did you panic about what you're wearing, or did you know? Like, yeah, I know what I'm wearing.
For the special?
Yeah.
Oh no, sorry. Go ahead. Who are we talking to?
Oh, sorry. I don't know.
Taylor. Yes, Taylor Thomas.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, yes. Go.
for the special, I bought like so many jackets that were very just similar. I just wanted to wear exactly what I wore on stage to perform in clubs and wherever else, but like a nicer version of that, like right. a more put together. So I always knew like, okay, black jeans. I bought tennis shoes that had like a little bit of a lift in them. And
I was surprised by that for one reason, because they're high. And I just thought, it's been a fucking hour. How is she still stood in those things?
They're so comfortable. They're really not that high. Okay. They really weren't that high. And they were kind of like a wedge. So they were really comfortable, actually.
Rising. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Okay, good. You look lovely. I just, yeah, I, this, every time I see a woman on stage in a heel and it's an hour, I now know what it's like to be in a 3 or 6 inch heel on a red carpet for half an hour. And I'm ready to chop my feet off. And you don't, and when you move, actually, it's easier when you're walking. You guys are mostly stood in a very small space. You're not moving around a ton. That shit hurts your feet. I applaud you. Yeah. And then I'm going to ask for one tip, a quick tip that I've never shared on the show. But I was thinking about comedians earlier, and have you ever watched a comedian and all you can focus on is their sweat pits? Like they've got like really bad, they're pitting out super bad, and I always think, God, why didn't their stylist, or if they don't have a stylist, why didn't somebody just tell them there's a really easy solution? There's underarm sweat pads, so no matter what you're wearing other than a tank top, doesn't work for a tank top, but anything else, that you can get them in like a pack of 50 from like Target, whatever. They look like sanitary towels, but much, much thinner. But you've got like the sticky part on the outside, and you put them on the inside of your top. You would never know you're pitting out. Like, you don't need to do the armpit Botox. You just wear your pads under your arms, and you're good to go. So for your next special, if ever you think, all right, it might be a hot one, here you go.
Did I have pit stains? I didn't have pit stains.
You
didn't.
You had a jacket on, which is why.
That's why I wear jackets.
I honestly did. When I saw the jacket, I thought anyone who was doing an hour and doesn't have a layer on is nuts, because you are going to see that for sure. You're going to see that. And I know you said, Kelsey, you said it was going to be cold. I would take the cold any day over a warm studio. Any day.
Yes. 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 For sure. That. Help
them. When I've seen on camera, it's only happened a couple of times when I've seen myself with pit stains or just like sweat and more sweat. I can take anything else. Like I could sneeze and have like the kid thing hanging out. I can make my peace with that more than pit stains.
Right.
Yes.
So there's my queer eye.
Thank you.
Oh, it's good.
Thank you. Well, for sure.
You guys,
pit pads.
Thanks for giving me an hour and 15 minutes.
Thank you.
Oh
my gosh.
You are so kind and amazing and lovely. And I know how many podcast requests you must get, which is why when I messaged you, I was like, please, if you don't want to do it, it's completely fine.
I'm so comfortable with a no. I say I'm real good with a no. If I say yes, it's because I truly care for the person and I want to do it. And I knew I'd have a giggle. So thank you so much. Really, I appreciate you having me on. You guys, it's been so fun. And Kelsey and Delaney, it's lovely to meet you. So nice to meet you.
Hopefully
I'll see you in real life at some point.
Yes, that would be fantastic.
Love that. Thank you for wanting to come to a show.
I really want to come to a show. Taylor, I'm not fucking lying. Like, when you know you're going to a show, just text me if I'm in town. I really would love to go. I'll drive.
Absolutely, yeah. Once everything's open again and we can do that.
And if you want to watch a creepy comedy special, I have a free one on YouTube called Love at First Cousin. If you guys watch comedy specials every day.
Oh my gosh.
It is about romantic cousin relationships.
Taylor.
So, it's so good.
Well, obviously, you have Delaney's. Would you send it? Like, that's so.
Yes, I'll send it. Yes, send it right now.
It's so, what made Michael Bublé fall in love with Delaney.
Oh, Michael Bublé watched the special and he was on the show recently. I talk about cousin fucking tan. So if that's your thing, you know.
I've fucked so many of mine. So yes, apparently it is. Weirdly, mostly female. So yeah, that's my thing. You guys, enjoy the rest of your day. Thanks so much for having me. There's a producer on here and I forgot. Oh, Aaron, I will send you this voice recording in a moment. You guys, thank you so much. Stay safe.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye, tan.
Oh, he's amazing.
I in shock. I just can't believe that happened.
I just didn't want it to end. What do I do with the rest of my day now?
Oh my gosh.
Can that was my whole
please,
day.
Can we all just please hang out? Yeah. We can go somewhere.
We can go somewhere outside. Safe.
Oh, that yeah. Amazing. That was one of my favorite episodes, just because that yeah, sure. I just really enjoyed that conversation. And hearing about his background, too, was so interesting. Stuff I just, you know, never knew about, you know.
His Queer Eye story was amazing. I didn't know any of that, that he had no interest in being on television, because he's such a natural.
So yeah. natural.
He's a natural entertainer to me, that I was like, oh, yeah, this is probably what you always wanted to do. And the fact that he was so nervous and wanted to quit, I mean, I didn't know it was possible to love him more. I really didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Same.
So great. We have an iTunes review, right?
Yes, we do. This is from Proud Helpster K. It says, Cookies, comedy, and all the compassion. To anyone who feels scared, sad, or anxious, give this pod a listen. These ladies do such a good job normalizing what everyone goes through and are fully aware that they are not experts. They get it and they laugh through it, which helps us laugh along. Any age, any gender, there is truly zero shame. Delaney Taylor and Kelsey created a safe space for us to listen and learn, feeling genuinely self-helped. Many kudos, claps, and cookies for these three wonderful human beings. Thank you so much. That was a really nice one. Thank you, Helpster K. Very sweet.
Thank you. Well,
I mean,
I'm going to go lay down.
Yeah. What do you do? What do we do?
Yeah. Yeah. We'll have segments next week, guys. The last couple guests have been so incredible and given us so much.
Yeah. Honestly, Tan interviewing us was a segment in and of itself.
Yes.
Yes.
That was the good shit for the episode.
Absolutely. All right.
We love you guys.
Stay safe. All right. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you guys so much for listening to Self Helpless. We really appreciate it and would love anything you can do to help the show grow and get the word out. So if you could leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, that helps us move up the iTunes charts. If you can tell a friend, a coworker, a family member, anybody that you think would love the podcast, you can also screenshot an episode and share it in your Instagram, Instagram stories, anything helps. Also, if you want more of the show, if you want bonus episodes, if you want to be able to be more interactive and help choose podcast topics, you can go to patreon.com/selfhelpless and join there. You guys can follow me on Instagram @KelseyCookComedy, on Twitter @KelseyCook. You can go to my website, kelseycook.com, which has links to my online makeup course. You can listen to my album, Savor It, on Spotify and iTunes. And you can watch my foosball web series on YouTube called Wrists of Fury. How about you guys? Where can people find you?
You can follow me @TaylorTomlinson on Instagram and Twitter. My website is ttomcomedy.com. And you can watch my 1-hour special streaming on Netflix right now called Quarter Life Crisis.
Awesome. And you can find me at DelaneyFisher.com. That's where you'll find information about my 1-to-1 consulting and my online courses. So basically, if you're a business owner, podcaster, or comedian, and you're looking to either start those things or grow those things, you can reach out to me for more information. I also have an email list at DelaneyFisher.com where I share my favorite tools, tips, treats, and free shit. And then we just want to say a big special thank you to our wonderful editor, Emma Erdbrink, and our fantastic associate producer, Humaira Nawaz.
And you can find everything that we all just mentioned at selfhelplesspodcast.com.